good show tonight.
That was fun.
I felt like it was really rolling.
That's a nice way to wrap the year.
I really enjoyed it. That was a lot of fun for me.
It took a while to warm up. We were starting off a little sloppy. Then we got it rolling pretty good.
Fuck, we spent 30 minutes going over 2018 whiskeys. I was like, we gotta go.
No, that was good. People liked that conversation.
I can always tell when Kenny's like, I can see it in his eyes. Like, I mean, there's like a in his forehead, like when he's like, all right, we got it.
Did you know Patreon saves lives? Well, maybe not, but it certainly saved this podcast from ending at one point. Show your support and join today. Hey everyone, welcome back to the last episode of Bourbon Pursuit before our 2018 Christmas holiday. And I'm going to make this a quick one because we've got kind of a long episode because it's the wrap-up of 2018 and then are looking forward to the futures and predictions of bourbon in 2019 as well. On our barrel pick sides, we've got order forms now out for Four Roses and our Joseph Magnus barrels. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, you should have gotten the email if you were selected in the randomizer to go and buy. So please, you've got 72 hours from when I sent that email out to actually go and purchase, or you're going to lose your spot. So please go and do that. Lastly, I also want to say Merry Christmas to everybody that's out there. I know you've got probably a lot of driving ahead of you for the Christmas holidays, so hopefully you're tuning in. Take some bottles over to your family members, open them up, share them with family, share them with friends this holiday season. And if you can, turn them on to Bourbon Pursuit. Say, I listened to this podcast. It taught me a lot. And hopefully we're teaching you a lot. Maybe we're just not rambling a bunch of stuff. But please spread the word. Word of mouth is always the best way to kind of get good news out there. And speaking of good news and making this podcast even better, make sure you take the time. Leave some reviews. That's what makes us better. When I get to hear the positive or negative and critical feedback from people, it actually makes the show a lot better. So please take the opportunity, not while you're driving, but when you have an opportunity to sit down at the desk, and leave us a review. It goes an awful long way to help growing the show, helping our rankings, and keeping us the number one podcast in bourbon. Now with that, enjoy this week's episode. Here's going to get a quick message from Joe at Barrel Bourbon, and then you can hear Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
Hi, Joe from Barrel Bourbon here. Coming this fall to our Barrel Craft Spirits line is a marriage of 13-year-old vintage rums from Barbados, Guyana, and Jamaica. Use our store locator to find a retailer or bar near you at barrelbourbon.com.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. So this has been kind of a weird week for me. We're leading into the holidays, and all the bourbon stuff has pretty much been written for the year, and I flat out had no ideas coming into this week's Above the Char. And although I routinely ask you all to give me ideas, I was running low on those requests in my inbox. So I did what any sane bourbon writer would do. I went to Twitter and asked a simple question. What should I talk about? And I had a lot of really good ones, like, 51% corn. Why do only some bourbons put sour mash on the label? And, basically what's that mean and why do they keep putting that on there? That's a good one that comes up quite a bit. In fact, everybody uses a sour mash technique. It just so happens that in the 1800s, if you saw sour mash on a label, that meant it was special and you could trust it and you wouldn't have any of those off-putting tastes, most likely. And then it became kind of a branding strategy, and you had about five different brands after Prohibition claiming to be the first sour mash. And like the curveball, where there's really one or three ways to throw a curveball, there's one dominant way to throw the curveball. And now there's basically one common language on all whiskey labels, and sour mash is among them. Another really good question I got was like, highlight a review from yours from 3 to 5 years ago. This comes from David Bolin, who also wanted to know the ones I'm keeping an eye on and what you all should be looking for next year. There was a review of a bourbon that I wrote, I think about 5 years ago. It was in 1776. I'm sorry, it wasn't their bourbon. It was their rye. It was their 1776 rye. It was like a 15-year-old. And this was kind of in that they fell on that time of the Source Whiskey stories, and nobody really trusted anybody at this time, and really, we still don't. But I just remember that whiskey being so amazing, and it was one of the first ones where I started telling people, like, look, guys, don't be dismissing these bourbons and ryes just because there's a label issue. The whiskey's really good. And since then, we've seen this crazy phenomenon and love for the Lawrenceburg, Indiana distillery. And that leads me to the next question, or the next topic that was suggested to me by Bryant Roberts, and that is to encourage more people to taste blind. And I try to do that a lot. Now, sometimes I don't have the manpower to do that, and I have to, you know, pour from the bottle and knowingly taste what I'm drinking. When I do that, I do my very best to remove any kind of subjective nature. So, but when you taste blind, you're removing all of your prejudices and all of the things that you think you might like going into the tasting. Like, I guarantee you, if you were to taste your average bourbon drinker a bottle of 15-year-old Pappy Van Winkle up against, I don't know, Smooth Ambler or Maker's Mark, I have a hard time believing that those people would consider Pappy to be that much better than the other two. And so when you're tasting blind, you're removing all of those prejudices. And if you are assessing the whiskey by itself, you're not looking into the price, you're not looking into the marketing, and you're certainly not going to be deceived by a backstory. So that's why I do my best to taste blind, and especially in competition or when I'm rating, that's very, very important. So that is a little rundown of some of the great questions I got on Twitter this week. I did get a lot of them, and I really appreciate all of your time for those 44 characters. Please keep them coming, as I do love answering questions on Twitter. But that's this week's Above the Char. Hit me up on Twitter or Instagram, at Fred Minnick. Again, that's at Fred Minnick. Happy holidays. Cheers.
Everyone, welcome back to the 27th recording of the Bourbon Community Roundtable. It's a fan favorite. It's a crowd favorite. We get the biggest bloggers that are in the realm, and we talk about random news that has happened. And this is going to be one of those special episodes that we do once a year. You know, we do the roundtables once a month, but this is the one we do once a year as we look back in our year of bourbon. So we're going to look at some of the highlights of bourbon in 2018, and then we're going to start doing what everybody loves and start making predictions for 2019. And before we get started doing that, Fred, Ryan, welcome back to the last roundtable recording that we are going to have for 2018.
It's awesome.
We're so glad to be here. Yes, who would have thought, if you'd asked me what would happen in 2018 last year, I would have whiffed hard, because 2018 was crazy and a lot of great things happened to, I think, all of us. So excited to kind of recap and go over everything, because a lot happened. And party.
And, you know, this was also, you know, looking back just 2018 year in review, I mean, Fred joined the show. This is, I think, his third roundtable that he's been on. So how you liking the roundtable discussions and stuff so far, Fred?
You know, it's a lot of fun for me. I'm a big sports fan, and this reminds me a little bit of Around the Horn, you know, the way we do it. And we have a great cast of characters. I kind of agree with a lot of people who always say we should do more of them. You know, I think it's a good, it's a lot of fun for me, because I like talking shit on shit, and it's a good place to do it.
Yeah. As soon as Kenny buys the buzzers where we can mute people and like give out points, I'm in for, you know, two a month. Until then, no.
Do you guys watch Around the Horn? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Those guys are pretty smart, though. I don't know if we fit into that category. Those guys are pretty sharp.
Have you ever seen Woody Page?
Okay. Maybe they're bullshit the whole time.
Give them a little bit of credit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it always blows me away, too, knowing that there's actually this much news that happens in bourbon, at least for us, every 3 weeks. But yeah, we could do this every 2 weeks for the amount of stuff that comes out, as well as the great questions that we get from our audience and listeners that are out there as well. But before we kick it off, we always want to go around the horn and kind of get our lay of the land of who's here. So, Blake, I'm going to go ahead and start with you since you're on my left.
Yeah, so my just regular introduction on this one, Blake from Bourboner. You can find me at BOURBONR.com. I didn't know if we were like jumping into like our New Year's resolutions right away or whatever it's going to be. So, no, you can find me at Bourboner.com, Facebook group, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Starting to do about a bi-weekly Bourboner Live show. So definitely check in this Wednesday. We're going to have a special guest. I'm gonna leave it a secret for now and maybe reveal that one a little bit later on this week's episode, but no, definitely check it out. And if you want to see any rules changed in the Bourboner Facebook group, make sure to go vote now. We're working on that now. So far we've had about 2 serious submissions for rule changes and everything else has been a joke. So that's kind of sums up the group pretty well. Yeah. Guys, this is serious. I'm looking for change.
And if I'm your special guest, I haven't got my notice yet.
Yeah. Well, I said if you iron your shirt, we're definitely going to have you on. But
I just dug this out. I thought it was too good not to wear.
And Jordan, go ahead.
Sure. So this is Jordan, one of 3 guys from BreakingBourbon.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, all those good sites at Breaking Bourbon, and also sign up for our newsletter. And we do a near daily release calendar. So make sure you're getting in your last Christmas shopping by checking out the calendar.
And Carrie.
This is Carrie from Suburbia. I don't even know why I'm still here. I used to blog back in the day, and my accomplishments recently were that I played tennis last week and I did really well. And then I did good stuff at work. So I'm really excited about that. But if you want to check out my blog, it's SUBOURBIA.com. It's great stuff from a couple years ago. And I am hiring somebody to write for me. I have plenty of booze that I can pay you in and Bitcoin. So hit me up at @bourbon_gamer on Twitter.
Still keeping the Bitcoin dream alive.
I have no choice. Can't sell it.
So I think an easy way to kind of go in with no lube, and let's start talking about our favorite whiskey of the year.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word.
What? Is that not an analogy? Yes.
Going with no lube? Oh, for God's sake, Kenny.
So nobody's heard that analogy before.
Yes, we have. We have a family audience out there. My kid is actually probably watching this.
I try to play these shows when my kids or podcasts with my kids in the car. Yeah. Now I got to turn them off because Kenny.
Listen, my daughter dropped a couple GDs in the last couple podcasts. So, you know, he's really getting with it with the cussing.
I'm trying to get up there with Joe Rogan, guys. We got to up our game a little bit.
Fair enough.
All right, Lube. Go on, Lube boy.
All right. So, lube or no lube, but we're going to jump into our 2018 whiskey of the year. And somebody just put in the comments that says I knew Kenny was a dry guy. Oh man. All right. We're going to have to keep going here. All right, so we're going to want to really jump in and really talk about our 2018 whiskey of the year. And there's one that's already been out there. It's pretty well known, and that's Fred's. And so, Fred, I kind of want to let you to go first to kick this off because, you know, you got a chance to try a lot more probably bourbons and whiskeys than we have. And you've got to do them all blind. You've been able to have the sort of lay of the land. You've already had your article published in Forbes. So kind of talk about yours.
So my American whiskey of the year was this barrel craft spirits release, the 15-year-old. It's a new line that they have, kind of like a super premium, I guess. I don't know, but it's got a gray label. Yeah, I just call it the gray label because I can't really differentiate the barrel craft spirits and the barrel batches because they're pretty much they look the same to me, text wise, but so I call it the gray label. But I've been very fortunate in being formerly Whiskey Advocate's, you know, lead reviewer until I started my own magazine and left. And then after I left there, Forbes recruited me to start doing reviews for them, and basically, I've a lot of people send me stuff. I buy a lot of stuff, and I had narrowed down, you know, the top 15 whiskeys, American whiskeys, you know, based on, you know, what, how I had personally rated them. Some of those ratings were published. Some of them were not. There was a little bit of a gap from my reviews, but I was continuing to taste. And I also have an app coming out here pretty soon that has ratings in it. So I've been very active in my tasting. I think I've tasted like 600 this year. So, and written notes to them. So I had a pretty good database of things that, you know, would be in the competition for me. And so I put 15 in there, had them blind tasted. I had a guy come in and pour them, and he swore to it, you know, that he didn't, you know, put them in any kind of order or anything like that. So I had no idea what I was tasting. He was present to make sure, you know, that I didn't, you know, cheat or anything like that, or go back and look. And I did the tasting live on Facebook and Instagram, and it was, lo and behold, number one. And number two was the William LaRue Weller from this year's Buffalo Trace Antique Collection. So this, for my blind tasting, won, you know, best American whiskey. Now, with that said, I went back and tasted it several times, and I'm very proud to say it is affirmed. Like, I really, really love this stuff. It's great, great whiskey, in my opinion.
I got a sample bottle myself. I tried it with Ryan. He came over, and we agree. It was pretty good. Yeah. It had a lot of those characteristics and a lot of really full flavored. That really kind of hits a lot of the check boxes that many people are looking for when you're looking for a pretty good whiskey. The retail price is a little like eek, but I think it's something that might be deserving of it.
Yeah. And you know, when it comes to retail pricing, this is something that I have, you know, for years I've struggled on this. And the bottom line is like the price, there are so many under $40 bourbons that I've ranked 88 to 93. And the best way that I can do this objectively is just to taste them, because I've scored things that were $300-$400, like in the 70s. So like a couple last year, the Parker's Heritage Collection got like a 77 and a 76 from me, or something like that. You know, and that's the same price point, if I'm not mistaken. And so, like, I don't know how to, you know, and other than like my scores and like you just, whether you like them or not, the rating system is the only way I can say differentiated on price. But in terms of tasting, when you taste a blind, you don't know what the price is, because it'll influence how you think about the taste.
Can I ask you what level of marzipan was in it?
This was a high marzipan. High. Now, the better question is, Ryan, did you taste marzipan?
You know, my sample was so small, I can't remember.
And Kenny, Kenny recently actually tasted marzipan in real life, right?
I did. I was in Seattle last week and went to this place called, it's this Russian bakery that's right there on Pike Street. Like Pyorsky or something like that. But anyway, they had these.
It's funny because they have rolls. It upstairs too in at this Russian bakery for
that. And lube.
We're going to keep the lube jokes going? Is that what we're doing? Jordy, oh boy. But yeah, it was, yeah, I mean, it's like an almond paste. It's pretty good stuff. But I kind of want to keep this conversation going. And Jordan, go ahead and kind of talk about Breaking Bourbon. Yeah, we and kind of what you all actually
so every year Suspension Tradition on Breaking Bourbon, we do a favorites list, right? So our favorites list is the three of us each listing out our favorite bourbons or whiskeys that we've tasted this year, American whiskeys. Now, our favorites isn't necessarily our best of, right? It's just what really stood out from us. So I'm not going to really spoil anything. I will say I've had a number, because that's coming out next week. I will say I've had a number of really good whiskeys that stood out this year. I thought 2017, if you're at our best of list, was kind of a dry year, right? Nothing really popped out as much as other years. I think other years there's a lot more innovation, a lot more stuff that really stood out. 2017 was a low year, we all thought. Now 2018, exact opposite, right? it's been really hard the last few weeks trying to whittle it down what my, you know, what my favorites were, just because there were so many good ones out there, right? So I don't want to say what's going to be on there, right? But some that did stand out, which may or may not be on the list, but like that Bellmead Bourbon Cask Strength Reserve, right? I had zero expectations going into sampling this. Blew me away, full of flavor, right? Eric just cracked open a bottle of Jack Daniel's Heritage. Blew him away. Not, like ones that we wouldn't assume, like the unassuming have suddenly been front and center. There's some great ones out there, right? The barrel stuff that's coming out that Fred had mentioned, really good. I thought Heaven Hill really knocked it out of the park with a lot of their releases this year, right? The Old Fitz release that came out this fall, super, super good. So all that'll be captured in the article. So I don't want to, you know, I realize I'm teasing it right now, so I don't want to give it away, but it is what it is. But overall, 2018, really good year for whiskey, right? A really good year, I thought.
I gotta concur with you on that Jack Heritage barrel. That was my number three in the blind tasting. And it's phenomenal. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Surprisingly, I mean, if people are out there, they can see a bottle for $65, scoop it up. I don't think you're going to be disappointed in it whatsoever.
Yeah, Jack Daniels, you know, they get a lot of crap, but you know, when they put that, I mean, they put a lot of effort into what they do. But that particular release was just so good.
Yeah, yeah, I think they don't get enough credit because it is what it is. You know, everyone just assumes, oh, it's Jack Daniels, it's all the same. But I've had some single barrels from them that are really good. And I keep wanting to slip them into a blind tasting somewhere because I think people would be surprised by that. But then, you know, if promoting Jack Daniels is like in some people's mind saying, you got to go try this new cheeseburger at McDonald's, you're going to love it. You know?
That's true.
But at the end of the day, if it's good, it's good. If, you know, I don't know, McDonald's bought grass-fed beef or something for a special release, it'd be a little different. But it's still hard to convince some people in their own mind that
the McRib.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, like, people shit on the McRib, but damn, it's really good.
It hits the spot now and then, right?
Yeah. My toe swells after I eat the McRib. So
it's because you're eating toe.
Blake, go ahead. You go next.
Yeah. So I don't. I feel like I've missed some releases this year. Because for me, you know, I didn't love the Parkers. I actually did like the 27-year-old, but I think that just gets ripped on. And I'm still not convinced that I got the same sample as everyone because what I got was really good. That one, I really enjoyed that. I think just because it was so surprising. And I love the Booker's 30th. You know, I've had a chance to try that. And I think I put this on Facebook too. You know, it's always hard when you take these press trips to come out and say, wow, this is actually really good, because the automatic reaction is, well, of course it's good. You're tasting with, you know, Fred, and just sitting there, and you got a free trip out of it. But I thought it was really good. I thought that was great. I thought the Ezra's was a great release. You know, if you talk about available. And then there were, I'm trying to think of which batch it was, but the Elijah Craig Barrel Proof, I think it was this most recent one. I'd have to go back and look at samples, was really good. So I've got a few that are in contention with me or for me. And then, you know, kind of the Old Faithful of the William LaRue Weller. I thought that was a really good showing in the antique collection this year. And kind of tasting through all five of those, that was almost head and shoulders above everything else. So I'd throw that one in there as well.
Okay. Kerry, what about you?
Man, I got to be kind of the naysayer in this whole thing. I really didn't think 2018 was that good of a year when it came to releases. I'm going back through the calendar because I forgot what we had this year. I know we had the two Old Fitz releases plus the 14-year in the gift shop. You know, I tried all three of those. I thought the first release, the 11-year, was terrible. I thought the 9-year was actually pretty decent, and the 14-year from the gift shop is, I don't know, it's kind of weird. It tastes like corn pudding to me, which I don't dislike it, but it's like got that Heaven Hill kind of corny flavor to me. The Parker's was a letdown. The Old Forster Birthday Bourbon was terrible this year. I'm trying to go through the list of everything, and the 4-grain just tasted the same as last year's 4-grain, which was a step down from Seasoned Wood, which was also a step down from Cured Oak. I just don't think it was that great of a year. The CYPB at $40 was a decent pour, but you know, people spending $200-$220 on it, and of course they're always crazy when it comes to Weller, but you know, I thought that one was okay. I would say honestly, of all the releases for the whole year, probably the Rip Van Winkle 10 year is probably my favorite thing that I've had this year. Really, really good batch this year. The William LaRue Weller definitely was tops of the antique, which made me sad because I thought the Eagle Rare at 101 proof was going to be amazing. And I feel like it was good, but I don't think it was amazing. And then, yeah, maybe, you know, I haven't had Booker's 30th yet. It hasn't hit Georgia. And there's some other things that I didn't get to try. I wasn't invited to go hang out with Booker. No, you know, and try this kind of stuff. I'm not in that crowd, but I'm, I don't think
he has to write three articles a year.
Since Booker's dead, I don't think anybody here was invited to
him. Okay, sorry. The no that's.
Well, technically, I believe there is a. Didn't Freddie have
that's a true. Room? Yeah.
Yeah. He, we didn't hang out with him either.
He's 3 months old, but I hope Jimmy was not asking you to hang out with him.
He was
I will say I did like the Four Roses 130th this year. I thought it was a good batch. Thought it was better than the 16 and 17. Reminded me of the 2015.
That was a good batch. I'll include that in there.
That was tasty.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything blew me away for the
What
year,
about though. A store pick, Carrie? You like store picks.
I do like store picks, but to be honest, Eagle Rare store picks are my favorite, and I've just been drinking last year's. You know, I loaded up when they said there would be no barrels. And, you know, I've had a couple OWA store picks this year. I think they're garbage. They are nothing like the OWA store picks from a couple years ago. I use that sparingly, but they're just not very good. The stuff that's barreled now, the Blantons, I've had a couple store pick Blantons. None of them are good. I got one store pick Blantons from one of our buddies on Twitter, who it was, sent me his store's Blantons, and it was actually one of the best I've ever had. That actually might be one of my favorites of the year.
Do you think more cynicism is growing into your reviews as you kind of broaden, you taste more and more, or it's really just the selections are getting worse?
I think it's both. I think I've been cynical. I've grown more cynical as everything has gotten crazier and dumber and more annoying. I've probably gotten more cynical, but at the same time, you try it against older stuff, and not even, you know, we're not talking like 2010 or anything. I'm talking 2014. Yeah. You compare the stuff to it's totally different.
What about non limited edition releases, right? What about more of the stuff that's going to be out there every day? Was there anything that you tried that stood out to you?
The 1910 from Old Forester. I know it's lower proof than 1920. I thought that was a really good release.
You stole my thunder.
We killed that sample pretty quickly. I forgot about that one until just now. That was a pretty good kind of everyday release. I know everyone's had that Ezra barrel proof and they love it. I have not come across any in Atlanta. I kind of stopped running around the stores because I'm just tired of it. So just waiting for it to land somewhere local that I can pick it up. I've heard that's a really good one though.
I'll add a little caveat to my answer based on what Paul Burns put in the comments, which was the new riff. So as most know, I've been diving more into the craft spirits world as of recently, and New Riff has put out a lot of good stuff. So I think that's what has me more excited is some of these other distilleries putting out really good products, and it's those ones where you say, all right, this isn't good for craft, it's just good. And I've had several barrels from them that have fit into that category. So they're one that has me excited. Now to see what it'll do at 6 and 8 years old, I think will be really cool. But even now I find it very, very, you know, rich, a lot of flavor, and pretty complex.
Yeah, New Riff is not really nice.
Blake, I'm still convinced your New Riff pick, they accidentally like put 8 year
old that was delicious
in there. Like that was not a 4 year perfect.
That was really good.
I'm pretty sure Larry Ebersold, single or individually blessed that one barrel.
Where is this barrel? When are you selling this barrel?
Hold on. Before we get too far, because you guys are killing everything I'm about to say over here. Yeah. So I want to go before we keep going down this rabbit hole. So, well, I want to go first, and then I'll let Ryan go. So I did think the Old Fitzgerald Bottled and Bond, the 9 year, the fall release, was by far the best of the decanter releases that actually happened this year. I thought it was also just a pretty good whiskey. Was it the best? I don't know. I probably would still favor George T. Stagg over it, but you know, at the very end of the day, I was down there. I was just looking at my bottles and I look at the bar and I keep going back to barrel 14936, which was Blake's barrel that he chose. That is the seal box barrel that's up there. And I'm honestly, I'm amazed by it. It is one of the best single barrel picks that I've had in a long time. And I'm not just trying to pat his ego here and say this because, you know, we're good friends, but it is a solid bourbon. It rivals our pick. I'll say that. It might be a step ahead. I'll give him that. But it's just a fantastic, fantastic whiskey. And I'm actually still amazed that they're still available right now on the website, because this was something when I know Ryan comes over and I have other people come over and they're like, oh, I don't know, like some 4-year-old whiskey. I mean, and then I make them try it and they're like, holy crap, it's got like butterscotch in it. Something that you wouldn't expect out of something that's only 4 years old. It was surprising and really good.
Oh, I gotta get my credit card. I'll be right back.
Which it was funny. They put and I think what made it stand out to me is, and we may have talked about this last time, but they put buttered toast and basically they give you a list of barrels to try from. And, you know, they kind of have their tasting notes and you say, all right, this one sounds good. And buttered toast just stood out to me. And I tasted it. I'm like, I don't know if that's buttered toast, but it's definitely like a butterscotch note, which was really, really interesting to see. So, and that's where, you know, you get into the debate of where does bourbon hit its peak flavor? And we always kind of joke around when these labels say, well, we barrel it when it's at its peak flavor. You know, I would have pulled this barrel too at 4 years old, because I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen in another 2-3 years. So it is interesting to see how some of these distilleries, and I think, you know, they got a column still. That's their master distiller has a brewing background. So the fermentation's good, goes to a column still really clean, and then it's in a barrel and 4 years, it just came out really well. So thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it. That, yeah. Yes, all this is being transcribed into a review that's going to go up tomorrow on Sealbox.
Yeah, I hate doing it because I don't like you that much, but it was it's a damn good
you
barrel.
The person I don't want to compliment, but the bourbon was
that. Hey, Blake, do you use trash cans? Someone's asking.
It's actually never a topic we've talked about here, have we?
No. Moving on.
Yeah.
And before we get into trash can blending, I want Ryan to go.
Okay, so now that there's none left to talk about, I'm going to go with Brown-Forman as my two, surprisingly, because I usually do not like Brown-Forman products, but I really like the President's Choice this year. I thought it was fantastic. I think the first one was really good, and then the one that Jackie gave to us when we recorded, thought it was awesome. Barrel proof, awesome juice. And then the 1910 for me is a home run. Usually I love barrel proof stuff, but at 94 proof, it has a ton of flavor, ton of complexity to it. Reminds me of an older whiskey. I was just really excited about that because you just don't see that anymore. A lot of stuff at 94 proof just doesn't have that kind of flavor.
Good deal. So before we go on to the next subject, there's just kind of want to do some shout outs for some other ones that weren't on here. There was a lot of stuff for Boone County releases, which are a lot of MGP stuff, which I also heard they're under like, they've got like less than 6 barrels of MGP remaining. So it's going to be interesting 2019 for them.
They've got more than 6 barrels left.
All right. So they've got 8.
No, they've got, you know, they're losing barrels because everyone's picking them, but they've got more than, you know, let's basically put it this way, that, you know, they would have more barrels than Blake probably has right now. How many barrels you got right now, Blake?
In my house or in
stock in general? On Steelbox.
Oh,
they're in the
12 dozens. Or so. Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, anyway, before we get too far, there was some other shout outs for Four Roses 130th, as well as Little Book Volume 2.
No, not good.
It's everybody's different.
Everyone's got their opinion. Yeah. Now that's the great thing about tasting is like everyone has their opinion, and sometimes I suck to those people, and that's fine.
So before we kind of go on, I also want to start talking about, you know, we talked about whiskey of the year for a lot of us. 2018 was a great year for pretty much everyone right here. Everybody has started elevating, figuring out new ways to kind of diverge and grow platforms, grow audiences and everything like that. So I kind of want everybody to kind of take a second. Let's not go as long as winded as I thought we were going to do on just 2018 whiskey of the year, but kind of talk about, you know, one big accomplishment that you achieved in 2018. Carrie, you want to go first?
Sure, man. No, let me go last.
Okay. Then
I'll go first. Can we go first?
Sure.
Blake, is it whiskey related? Because I brought two new children into the world. Does that count? Is that
Yes. I mean,
no. I mean, just, and I'm kind of one of those guys who will sit down at the beginning of the year and write out a few goals and, you know, kind of see how I check off. And some of them hit, some of them I don't hit. And one of the big ones was just kind of expanding the Bourboner Facebook group to a manageable level. And I think, you know, while it is somewhat crazy, it still works. And the reason for that is just expanding the platform and expanding kind of the brand of Bourboner. So that's been good to see. And then a big thing was for launching Sealbox. And I got that done in July. So was really happy about that. So, you know, it's fun to see a lot of hours and work and something actually come together. That is always exciting, you know, no matter the headaches and frustration, it is cool to see something that you work really hard on to actually go live. So that was a big one for me.
Awesome.
Cool.
Fred, you want to go to the next?
Yeah, I think probably for me, the easiest one to be like, this is a dream come true, you know, creating a magazine that, you know, I think preserves and, you know, celebrates bourbon in a way that I think everybody can enjoy has always been a dream of mine. And tied to that is my Amazon Prime show, Bourbon Up, which a new episode will be dropping here pretty soon. So that's probably it for me, like being editor in chief and founder and owner of a magazine that I think will really, you know, be appreciated by listeners out there. It's something I've always wanted to do.
Fred, what does that look like from idea to first edition? I mean, was this idea starting to come together 2015, 2016, and then you finally make it, or?
Actually, you know, I think everyone knows that I was, you know, everybody's whiskey, you know, major whiskey writer, bourbon writer for a lot of these magazines. And, you know, I wrote for everyone from the New York Times, the Scientific American, but my core has always been Whiskey Magazine and Whiskey Advocate. And things just started changing, and I realized that I could not really influence much anymore, and I needed to make a change. That really started probably 2-3 years ago, and I just didn't know how it would come about. Like, this is one where, I mean, it takes a lot of work, a lot of money to get a magazine off the ground, and you know, and I've had offers before, but it would be like putting out, you know, a turd in front of a IHOP, and that's nothing I ever wanted to do. You know, those free, you know, get a free magazine. I always wanted something that would be of high quality. And I've been writing for this magazine called Covey Rise for a long time, and it just so happened he was looking to grow at the same time I was looking to make a move, and we kind of came up with the idea of doing a bourbon magazine. And it's been a great partnership. Right now we're in all the Whole Foods in the country, and Kroger, and some other grocery chains like Sprout and Earth Fair and Barnes & Noble and Books A Million. So we have a really incredible penetration into the newsstand space, and we're only one issue in. Second issue mails really right now, I think, right in the next couple of days.
Well, awesome. Congrats on all that. Jordan, you want to go next?
Yeah. So 2018 was a good year for us, right? Like, you know, like you guys, we launched our own barrel picks and like many did on Patreon. But I think more importantly, it was a super humbling year for the three of us at Breaking Bourbon. So we've been doing this. This is just something we do for fun, as, you know, everyone else is doing their thing too. And 2018 solidified us as the largest bourbon website on the internet. And we are now, so we're also now the fourth going into third largest whiskey website worldwide, which, considering we only focus on bourbon and American whiskey.
Hold on, who do you got to take to get there?
I'm not gonna name names, so I'll send you guys a list later. It's pretty humbling. So, you know, we're gonna end the year just shy of 2 million unique people visiting the site. Hopefully we'll continue to double it next year, but just being able to, you know, we're just three average guys who love whiskey.
Are you all ever thinking about doing it full time? Because you do a great job at it.
We it'd be great to do full time. I'm not sure if it would be able to take over our day jobs, Fred. But you know, if we ever have the opportunity to do something like that, I think that'd be awesome. But in the meantime,
because you like make real money, you don't like make bourbon writing money. You like make real money.
Yeah, we all have day jobs that are quite different than Breaking Bourbon. But that being said, you know, Breaking Bourbon is something. It's a true passion project that turned into more than that. And it's just been a super humbling year. And, you know, we just thank everyone who's visited the site this year and who writes in and, you know, tells us criticism, tells us praise. We take it all. We just love it. So
what you guys do is you're so methodic in what you're in your writing and your research. It's always reminded me of like a lot of my research, but also like a guy named Michael Jackson, who was a brilliant whiskey writer before, you know, before any of us got, most of us got into it. But so you guys do great work, and I'm just so glad to hear you guys are climbing those charts. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it's been fun. It's been, you know, more importantly, it's just been an awesome time to be part of this group too, right? I think everyone on this community roundtable, we've all seen each other grow and support each other, and that's been, you know, honestly the most exciting thing for all of us to see, right? And we've all now got to meet in person, and it's just been a blast. 2018 was a blast for all of us individually, but more so for the community roundtable. It's been awesome.
Everybody's tearing up around here.
Is this our last roundtable of 2018? I guess it is.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is. All right. So, Kerry, you brainstormed. You got something for us?
Yeah, I think my biggest accomplishment was staying friends with you guys and writing. And no, and I'm serious. Like, 2018 was a chill year for me. I mean, I'm super busy and work's been busy, and the kids, you know, always have activities, and I wish I could write more. I don't really enjoy writing. I enjoy reading my articles after I've written it, but
it's self-fulfilling, isn't it?
It's kind of self-fulfilling. And I think getting to know all of you guys a little bit more, getting to know Fred and staying on this podcast, probably, you know, my biggest achievement is setting myself up for a lot better year next year. I think there's a lot of things that I can do to grow the brand and to put more stuff out in the blog and just kind of be more out there, get to know you guys a little bit better. And
if I have some recommendation for you, Kerry, it would be to find, so you don't like writing. Okay. That's, you know, that is, it doesn't come easy for everybody, but find what you do love and find like what you, and if there's something that you like write about, don't write like everybody else, you know, write like how you like to write. And, you know, the Breaking Bourbon boys, they found their voice. Blake found his. I'm still searching for mine, man. It's a never ending pursuit. I would call it a bourbon pursuit.
We're gonna Can we sign off now? That's perfect.
All right, good night, everyone. Let's Kerry, as my senior English teacher told me, Blake, you have a great you have a hard time taking ideas from up here and putting them on paper. You have good ideas, but it's just that transition onto the paper where you have
a great idea.
Like, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or you're like really disrespecting me right now, but I'll take it.
With Fred, it looks like we're adding another extension to our brand, Bourbon Writing Consulting. For everyone else. So if you need help, Fred is at charge at $100 an hour or maybe more.
I'm absolutely free. Just ask Brian.
Yeah.
I help every writer. Every writer that comes to me, I try to help them.
I still think Blake and I, like Bourbonier Suburbia, would be a fantastic brand.
Bourbonia.
We should, even though Brian's not here, we should probably give him a plug, speaking of, as Fred said. So it's been a huge year for Sipping Corn, right? He released his first book. So if you guys haven't had a chance to read it, right, go out and grab a copy, Bourbon Justice. Brilliant book. It's really good.
Brilliant.
Huge kudos to him.
Thank you for doing that as well. Ryan, go ahead on your end.
Well, I'm not one to sit and boast, or I don't like to talk, but I mean, 2018 has been crazy. Like, I'm sitting here looking at my goals in Evernote, and like a lot of them I didn't accomplish, but I accomplished a lot of things that I didn't set out to. So like, don't talk on your phone when you're watching the kids. That didn't happen. But no, seriously, this right here, Pursuit Series, has been like in a, just a humbling, amazing dream come true, coming from, you know, growing up around bourbon and having the opportunity to create our own brand and label and sourcing whiskey with Kenny. It's been one of the most like enjoyable experiences I've been a part of. And it's something that's like reignited me and given me so much passion for this industry and really helped me understand how everything works. And now I'm just like so enthralled to be a part of this and so grateful and thankful. You can see it on my face probably, but it's just been so great. And I'm so thankful for this community to allow us to give us that opportunity. So
absolutely second that one. And from my side, you know, the growth of the show in 2018 has been phenomenal. Adding Fred to the show has been a huge plus to that as well. And not only that is, you know, we've talked about it before, Patreon is really what is helping continue to grow this show, to the point where it was probably a year and a half ago, something like that. I had a discussion with Ryan. I was about ready to hang it all up and quit the podcast because we just didn't have the motivation. Wasn't there. There wasn't something that was really driving it. And honestly, there's just so much work that goes in behind the scenes that it kind of goes unnoticed sometimes if you're not doing this. And so that's when somebody said, you should probably start a Patreon thing. And I was like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. It's grown and grown and grown. And to the point where we have hit our milestone as the past few weeks that we're now over $5,000 a month through our Patreon community. And what that is doing for me is it's now allowing, I kind of said it already, the Patreon community, but now to everybody else. So my wife is what you've all known for a long time is she's been working at Heaven Hill, but now she is quitting her job at Heaven Hill and going to be working on the podcast full time starting January 4th.
Wow. Awesome.
And thank you. And honestly, what this means to me and my family.
Heaven Hill in there.
No, like that.
I'm kidding.
But what honestly it means for me, it means a better family life. It means that I can offload a lot of the work that we've been taking on for the past 2 years. In regards of, I mean, we don't put out near as much social media as we probably could. And as well as trying to always keep batch processing emails that come in, it's a lot of time that's involved. And I'm glad that I can bring on somebody. And also one thing that everybody should know is that she's actually very talented. She's the one who taught me how to do all the video editing. And she did even the intro with the graphics and everything like that. So she knows what she's doing. She's going to do it way better than I ever can. So expect a lot more good things to come in 2019,
Kenny,
just from the show.
I just tell you, like, coming in, it's been an honor, and just observing your professionalism and like how you run, you know, this podcast, you treat it like a business, and you have a loyalty to the Bourbon Geek that's unwavering. And I got to tell you, it's been a true pleasure, you know, seeing you in action. So I hate to see you lose the crown of being the boss now, and your wife coming in.
Well, she might be your boss now too. Who knows?
Now, speaking of that, Kenny, what's the sexual harassment policy looking like for Bourbon Pursuit? How's she?
is this going back to the original how we started this, the loop or no loop discussion? But let's go ahead, because I know we're running low on time, and I really want to start getting into our 2019 predictions. But just some other things to kind of wrap up 2018. Vintage spirits law went into effect in Kentucky. There were some other minor changes that happened. We, as the community bourbon or the bourbon community roundtable, actually picked our first barrel together, Buffalo Trace. And in 2019, we've got another one coming as well. More news on that to come. Long Branch made its Wild Turkey debut with Matthew McConaughey. Let's see. Brian of Sippin' Corn won his case with Castle and Key against Sazerac. That was a pretty monumental thing as well. And now we can start talking about 2019. And so Blake had already hinted at it before, and this will just kind of be a fun one before we go into it. Going into 2018, he had banned crotch shots in the Bourboner group, as well as he had also banned no sealed bottle shots. Now he's, as he had mentioned earlier, he's looking for the next great suggestion to improve the group for 2019. So you had mentioned there were two. So what are those two that are kind of standouts right now?
Did you know that, according to AdAge.com, podcasts are able to engage listeners in a way traditional media can't? Podcasts are mobile. They can be taken anywhere a listener goes. It also becomes part of their daily routine, such as commuting, exercising, mowing grass, or perhaps just cleaning around the house. Did you also notice that you're listening to this right now? You'll never hear about a person just flipping through podcasts, so your message is heard loud and clear. It's also a permanent endorsement because it's built into the audio playback. That's a benefit not offered by any other medium. If that sounds interesting, let's talk. Send me an email, team@bourbonpursuit.com. Now, let's get back to the show.
Now he's, as he had mentioned earlier, he's looking for the next great suggestion to improve the group for 2019. So you had mentioned there were two. So what are those two that are kind of standouts right now?
No, I think the two that will probably come back are just like dusty pictures. Like, hey, how old is this? You know, we found this. What is it? Kind of deal. The problem is it can become a slippery slope of somebody just post a picture from the 80s and says, I found this in my granddad's. Then it turns into people trying to buy and sell. So that's what we don't want. But there's a lot of information that comes out when you post a picture of an old bottle and say, you know, does anybody have any information on this? And, you know, you get a lot of good things going on with like, yeah, look for the tax stamp, look on the bottom of the bottle, you know, where was it bottled? Was it Louisville? Was it Frankfurt? All this kind of stuff. So that was a big one. And then, I'm going to have to go look at it. I don't remember what the other one was.
Okay, what was a ridiculous one?
Oh, geez. It's like anything crotch shot related, or one was banning all Gator fans. One was banning all Bulldog fans. One there's a, you know, it got amount of hate for people who just walk into a store, take a picture of the shelf and say, what should I buy? But, and I get it, you know, from both sides, because we've all been there. I've talked about this before, but it's why I like taking on new things like rum or brandies and stuff, because you just don't know. You walk into a store and you have no clue what any of these brands are. So, you know, you understand thinking, yeah, I want to know what's good. But at the same time, you don't want, you know, there's a search feature on the Bourboner Facebook group. So if you see a brand, you can search for it. The number one thing to ban is anyone or anybody who asks anyone know what this is worth. That should be an automatic ban. You know, any political post that
gets annoying.
And that's the thing, is so much of it gets through, and there's three of us constantly checking the feed to see what is on there. So a lot of that kind of stuff. But the main thing is, you want the group to be informational and to kind of invoke discussion, but at the same time, you don't want it to go overboard where it turns into fights or people trying to sell, because that's not what the group's about. So it's just about finding that mix.
Absolutely. So another one, just to kind of keep this rolling a little bit, you know, towards the end of 2018, there was a lot of announcements for expansion. There was Kentucky Owl Park, there was Heaven Hill, I believe. Was it somebody that had another one last week?
Bullet? Diageo?
Yeah, something like that.
The new Bullet, right?
Yep. Now, is this just end-of-year spending? People are like, all right, we got to get on the books. Do we see any more possible expansions happen in 2019? Because it seemed like it was all the majors that were announcing this.
I think there's always a possibility that you can see Maker's Mark making an expansion. Maker's is... they're on fire everywhere. I was very fortunate to be on be on their Top Chef episode, but I think that's going to pay huge dividends for them because they're going to be everywhere on this season. I got to tell you, that is a brand that could make the leap to be the number one selling, you know, American whiskey in the last, in the next 25, 50 years, you know. So I would say, look at them. Somebody, you know, like a nice mid-tier brand like Smooth Ambler is one that's, you know, doing well in the trade that you could see, you know, expanding a little bit. It wouldn't be a lot, but a lot of these expansions are just, you know, it's a warehouse, it's a bottling line. You know, I think we need to qualify what, you know, a big expansion is, because to me, a big one is when a still comes in. The bottling lines, the warehouses, those are interesting, but that doesn't move the needle for me. What moves the needle for me are proof gallons. Proof gallons is basically that's your entry everywhere, because here's another, sorry, I'm just talking, but there's a lot of warehouse capacity in the state. So you have a lot of aging. You know, we know about contract distilling. There's a lot of contract aging, and so there's not a lot of need for building warehouses, because you have a lot of, you know, contract aging, you know, capacity in the state. And so I think that we'll see fewer warehouses being built and more stills fermenters being put in.
Where that's where you see somebody like a Bardstown Bourbon Company, who I think they basically quadrupled in size from a proof gallon standpoint within the first 2 years. And maybe the same thing could happen with like a Castle and Key or even a Rabbit Hole or a New Riff, who they're kind of...
I could see New Riff, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll spoil the post I'm working on a little bit, but kind of like that third wave of, you know, third wave coffee roasters. You had, first it was all Folgers. Then you had these just small, then you had like the Starbucks who were kind of taking the craft. And then you had these, smaller brands that come along, but making a pretty big dent in the game. So and whiskey in general is kind of seeing the same thing. You know, you had the big six, whatever it was, distilleries who were making the majority of it. And then you'd have the guy with the pot still. Now we're kind of seeing some pretty major players popping into the game, like Rabbit Hole, New Riff, Bardstown Bourbon Company, Smooth Amblers, even pumping out Wyoming whiskeys, pumping out a lot of whiskey. Yep. They're making a dent. It's not like they're going to sell 2,000 cases a year and that'll be a good year. You know, they're really cranking out some barrels. Same so it's interesting here, right? To see. Yep.
Same
exact. So are you saying Rabbit Hole is your guest coming up, Blake?
That would be a great one. Can I get them on? I don't know. I got rained out, so I only got to meet what's his name?
I'm Cave.
His name Cave. Cave. I got to meet him for like 5 minutes backstage at Bourbon and Beyond, because we got I'd love to have him on. So
that's Rabbit Hole is an interesting brand in that they built their distillery, in my opinion, for capacity. It's a gorgeous distillery. It's very urban. You have a nice like event space, but you could basically duplicate, you know, the production side on their event space side. So when they are ready to expand, they can build a second distillery essentially right there in the space.
Yeah. Which is smart. I mean, I think that just sets them up for future success. So
I can't drink anymore.
Well, and the other thing is you were mentioning about growth. You know, we'll see what happens with the JW Rutledge distillery that kind of had the announcement as well, where it's going to be a lot of probably the same thing of contract distillation. But the other side of this is the consumer side. And this is the side that means the most, because it is the ones that are out there shelling out the money to go and buy these bourbons on the shelf. So we continually see prices increase just a little year after year after year. I'm assuming that we're probably going to see the same trend happen in 2019. Four Roses has announced that their private select barrel program is going to have increases starting January 1st. Does anybody see this not happening anywhere?
I think you see happening everywhere. So then when releases come out like that Ezra barrel proof, right? Mm-hmm. Or the whatever it's proofed at, right? You start noticing them a little bit more, right? It's a good value then. So now all of a sudden, so we always go through this on the site because we always have a value section where it's like, why are we doing value now still? Everything's going up in price, you're doing the same thing. And then we realize, oh, when there is an actual good value, yeah, it does give something to talk about. So I think we're going to see it continuously go up. But I think the ones that actually start being consumer conscious when they pick a price point are going to see themselves rewarded very well, right? It may not be the best whiskey out there, but if you're one of the few playing that price ranges and you're okay, I think you're going to be rewarded.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think there's so much damn bourbon coming. You guys are talking rabbit hole and every other distiller and expansion and more bourbon. At what point do we just run out of space to buy more bourbon? And I am freaking out. I need a storage warehouse now. And you're talking about
to that point, you know, the distillers have been putting a lot of focus on the international markets, and they got kind of hamstrung a little bit with the tariffs, and you've seen craft distillers be immediately affected by that. So now, like, the European distributors will no longer have conversations with American craft bourbons, unless it's something like I would say New Riff, which New Riff kind of stands out a little bit more, maybe Rabbit Hole, but the ones that are outside of Kentucky, they're not going to be getting those conversations with European distillers with a 25% tariff on them.
Now, you think just because the price point will have to be on the shelf, or just in general, that's too much of a hassle to deal with?
It's quality times price point equal pie. over pound. what are the euro over euro? So that's the equation they're using there.
Are we still on 2019 goals, or did we pass that by?
Catch up here. Hey, but you know what, Carrie? You're exactly right. There is so much fucking shit out there.
Yeah.
Like, when is the limit? When will the people stop consuming?
You also have to realize, Carrie, right? The group that's watching this and us on this don't have much pity if you're saying you're running out of space for bourbon. Like, all of us are running out of space for bourbon.
That's what I'm saying. Right? The people listening, we all are collectors and hoarders, and we've got so much bourbon, and really it's about us, right? We do this podcast for us and the people who are into bourbon like we are, for all the bourbon lovers out there. So really, I mean, we talk about New Riff and all the expansion and all that, but we don't care about the people who are just buying the Jim Beam white label off the shelf who might
switch. Of course we do. I definitely care
about those folks, just to be clear.
I love those people. They're not buying vodka. Come on, man.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people will make that quick jump from, hey, I'm already drinking this Jim Beam White or whatever it is. They just know it as bourbon. What comes with the cool story next? And they make that jump pretty quick.
Can I explain why I hate those people? Yeah. Because they are the ones who lined up this morning at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning to buy a barrel of Blanton's at a local store that we had pictures in our local group and said, this is for a barrel of Blanton's. The line was around the building. That is why I don't like that particular subset. Because
we were all there.
Carrie, listen, you got to get the judgmental stuff out of your head and let people spend their money how they want.
That's my niche.
Well, no, you can have that niche, but you know, not when it comes to the consumer. Don't judge those guys. Judge the distillers.
What do I care about the consumer? Yeah.
We were all there. The whole point, we have to help everyone who starts, no matter what level of the journey.
Someone asks me for help, I will absolutely help and offer advice instead of the person who puts the Blantons that they just bought online.
You're the fucking Barstool Sports later. Guy. Carrie, call the Barstool Sports guy. You're that guy.
You get me. You know, I think the best thing for me in 2018 was somebody asked if I would admin a really large unnamed group on Facebook that deals with secondary market, and it is just a great release for me. I mean, it's exactly what I needed this year, and there is a difference between the person who wants to know more about bourbon and wants to share and open their bottles and the people who hear about people, you know, flipping Blantons. So they go wait in line and then they post online and flip it.
That's a whole different group of people that you're talking about there, right?
That's who I was focusing on.
So if you're focusing on like people who are just flipping and everyday stuff, that's fine. You can rant about that. But just focusing on folks who may drink like introductory bourbons, we got to draw the line there a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, in fairness, Kerry can like bitch about whatever he wants, and I think he's got a place here. He's like the Barstool sports guy, and you should own that, man. If you're looking for your place. Maybe that's it. You just fucking cynical. Bitch about everything. Bitch about yourself, though.
I'm cynical as shit. I mean, I get it. I guess I see the negative all the time in this hobby.
Just do not fuck with the Lexington Pizza Place. If you do that, you're fucked.
Why would I go to Lexington?
Did he?
The Goodfellas.
Oh, he went to like the worst pizza place in Jacksonville too and just ranted on how bad it was. I'm like, well, yeah, I've lived in Jacksonville my whole life. I've never heard of that place.
I mean, this guy just went in there and said, oh my God, this is the worst pizza ever, bro. You know, he's a bro dude, but...
Can we get back to bourbon? We can talk about pizza later. All right. So we talked about prices. You know, one thing that also happened in 2018 was Fred kind of screwed everybody that knew about Henry McKenna calling it the best value in bourbon. And he called it the best. It won the best, the San Francisco Spirits competition 2018. And we all kind of know what happened there. It's probably, as just Kerry said, people were buying it as soon as it hits the shelves. It's kind of flying off. But I don't think this is in the same limited or maybe even, I guess we could all say we all have theories of, you know, I guess creating a limited scarcity. We've all said that Sazerac might be doing that, but I don't really see that happening with Heaven Hill. Do we think that the Henry McKenna fad might pass in 2019 and perhaps we'll start seeing it regularly on the shelves again?
It's all over Atlanta.
I've already started to see it on the
shelves. I've never left PA. It's been all over PA. Raise the price a little bit. But
so Kentucky's a little bit of a different animal than everybody else. Kentucky's a
different animal. You know what I think it is? I think it's always going to be a popular bourbon that everyone talks about. As everyone else is dropping age statements, right, and rising in price, and right, kind of still really affordable, and it still carries a 10-year age statement.
It's a great
bourbon.
It's a fantastic bourbon. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But all those people buying that Beam White label, they're like, what's next? And then they're like, oh, you should buy Henry McKenna because it's going out of stock. And then everybody goes and buys Henry McKenna, and then they sell it for $50 online.
You know what? Taste Beam White label up against the craft bourbons and then the rapidly aged stuff. Like, I've done that before. It wins every time. And then throw a Woodford Reserve in there, too, and it'll still win. It's amazing how well Beam White label will do in a blind competition with, like, just everyday bourbons. Like it does really well. So play around with that a little bit.
Any private barrels?
Sure. Yeah, they'll do a private barrel, but they put it under a different label, give it maybe another, you know, year or two. They're pushing the Knob Creek private barrels more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can't get a Beam private barrel.
Oh, Fred can though.
Yeah, Fred. What's that?
I said, Fred, you can though for us.
Did you say you can or can't get a Beam?
No, you can't. You can. You just gotta ask for it.
Oh, I'd do that.
Yeah, I'd love to.
It'd be an interesting one.
You have to be on Top Chef to do that.
Yeah. Can anybody call Tom?
Yeah. All right. And so our last kind of topic when it comes to 2019 predictions is going to kind of be focused around Heaven Hill a little bit. You know, Denny Potter, longtime master distiller, was actually prior maker. He was at Maker's Mark prior, came to Heaven Hill, master distiller there, left Heaven Hill, and is now at Maker's Mark. So I guess the question is, I think that Heaven Hill will find a new master distiller at some point. But the question really becomes is it really an issue if they find one? Because at this point, it seems that production hasn't really stopped because of not having a master distiller. It's probably more of just having the marketing person behind it. So I kind of want to get your all's thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, the marketing department probably wants one ASAP. But as far as production, I mean, we've been there, Kenny. I mean, hell, they're pumping along just fine. Denny Potter wasn't there. You know, they got systems in place, processes in place. You know, a company and a distiller like that, it's, you know, plug in, replace, you know, everybody's replaceable in that. a master distiller is more just a figurehead. But I think it's a little bit concerning just from being kind of in Bardstown and knowing people. Like, it's weird. 3 or 4 years ago, like, everybody was leaving Makers and Jim Beam to go to Heaven Hill, and now everybody's leaving Heaven Hill to go to Jim Beam and Makers, and it's weird how that's kind of, like, evolved. And so I'm not really sure what's going on. If it's because Centauri is now, you know, after the strikes and everything, they're putting more value on employees and giving them more benefits or something. But it's kind of interesting how that's kind of played out.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think in the short term it's a big detriment, but in the long term, I think you kind of need that kind of that figurehead. You know, we talk about, like, what is the actual role of a master distiller from a production standpoint. They don't stop the stills tomorrow because Denny Potter's not there, so that keeps rolling. But from just you know, moving the engine forward, I think you need that person there who can be charismatic, who can talk about the product, who can understand the, you know, the entire production method around it, who can go to tasting, who can shake hands, who can jump on podcast, that kind of stuff. And really be, you know, liaison for the brand. I think the master distiller role is important, but the bourbon doesn't stop production because they're not there.
Yeah, and I think what Ryan said is very true, right? I'm sure the marketing department very much, especially in today's day and age, right? You have to look at the role of the master distiller over the last, you know, few decades. And, you know, it used to be a badge distinction and really one earned, and now it's more, who's your master distiller? Right. It doesn't matter if they have 5 years experience or 50 years experience, you're going to have a master distiller someplace. Right. And so, yeah, you need one, right? Just because it's everyone else has one and you just need to compete and just need to market for those folks who are just getting into bourbon. Right. And they just, hey, who's the master distiller? Oh, that person. Okay. Oh, you don't have one. Ooh, that must be a bad thing. They don't quite understand the history right behind that. So, you know, will it stop production? No, not at all. Will it, you know, stop the marketing game? Yeah, they really want someone there, right? And they want someone promoting it. Exactly what Blake just said. They're a figurehead. They're a very smart, well-talented figurehead, but they're a figurehead at the end of the day. And that's the way it should be, right? The machine behind the figurehead should always keep running no matter what. But you still need that person to get out there for the media and for the publicity and for the marketing to be that name, you know, face of the brand.
Yep. Well, with that, does anybody else have any other 2019 predictions they would like to put out there? And we're going to come back in at the end of 2019, and we'll see if any of them actually come to fruition.
I wrote down a couple of my goals for 2019. Number one, I'm going to finally meet you guys.
Is that a goal or a prediction?
I don't know which it falls into. It's more of a wish list. Definitely try to grow my brand. But I'll tell you what I'm actually really interested in. There's a lull that happens from probably January till spring when bourbon takes a dip, right? It always does. There's not a whole lot of releases. I don't know why bourbon distilleries don't release more in that time frame, but we typically have a dip, and you find that it kind of affects the secondary market. And every year I feel like there has been a bigger dip in that time frame. So I'm kind of hoping to see maybe the craze, and I don't mean the people who are into bourbon, but just the craze for the flippers starts to die down a little bit. And we can go back to more affordable pricing for the stuff that's old and the stuff that's rare. Kenny's shaking his head. He says it's never going to happen.
Ain't going to happen. No, it's just the nature of what this economy brings as more people get into it. And I mean, you can see it here in Louisville, and I'm sure you see it in Atlanta too, as more and more people get into bourbon, even limited releases are getting harder and harder to find, which means it's just going to keep driving the price up more and more and more, especially when it comes to value trades that people like you and I have acquired over years. And we can say, I really don't need this old rip of 2010. Sure, I'll trade it for a Booker's, whatever that comes out. You know, that's just one of the things. Like, the value at that point doesn't really mean as much to us anymore, and we'll just trade it off.
So, do we think it's a constant growing bubble that will never ever break?
I mean, if you look at something, maybe I need to TM it, but if you look at the Pappy Index and how that's creeped up every single year, I mean, let's just rewind the clocks back 3 years. old, maybe even 2 years. Old Rip Van Winkle on secondary was 300. Now it's at 425.
Like that's and over it, a year. It, that's it, like a year.
Yeah, and it hasn't. It's not stopping. So I don't see the train slowing down anytime soon.
I think my prediction. I think rock stars, the industry, while they used to be master distillers and they're still really big, it's now more of a rock star if you're a owner of a liquor store. So it used to be a big deal if you had a master distiller in your phone and you could text them and talk to them. Now it's, oh, who do you know who can help actually get you those limited releases, right? So that's what I think consumers are more excited about, which goes back to Kenny's point. The bubble's not slowing down anytime soon, right? When you're excited because you made good friends with a liquor store owner who may be able to hook you up, that's when things are even going more gangbusters than before.
That's a great prediction. Great prediction.
Yeah. So everyone who's a liquor store owner right now is like high-fiving themselves because they're like the coolest kid in the group, but it's true. But
they already are. Like, everybody already hits them up now anyways. I don't know how that would be any different in 2019, but
gonna get a whole they already have a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
The cynical comes out.
I'm not being cynical. I'm being truthful. Like,
pretty sure that was cynical.
How many liquor store owners are sitting around saying, man, I wish some guys would just come up and chat with me about our bread. I really wish some guys would get on our allocated bourbon list. They come in and they buy a bottle of Schlitz malt liquor and they leave. And
no, it's not that. But so you, right, you even as a consumer, would you rather have Denny on speed dial in your phone that you can text anytime? Would you rather have a liquor store owner?
Denny. Like, Denny. Really? Okay.
So I doubt that. If someone gave you the choice, you'd be like, oh, that guy is going to.
I already have three liquor store owners on my cell phone. Well, I don't have Denny. You asked me which I'd rather have. Now I'd rather have Denny.
Oh, man. There are some other good comments in here that 2019 will still not be the year of a rye release for Parker's Heritage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's too simple. It's like,
it seems to fit too all too well to actually do it. Just, you know,
Fred, do they have the rye for it? Why don't they do it? Have you ever asked them?
Yeah. Well, so they have Rittenhouse. So, you know, absolutely they have the rye. And they were distilling their rye with Brown Forman for a long time. That contract got cut off in, I think, 2013. And so now they're distilling their rye again.
Oh, so they weren't doing it for a while?
Well, because of the fire, yeah. With their distillery down, they kind of had to contract some of their stuff out, and that, you know, the rye was the big one that was contracted out to Brown Forman.
Gotcha.
My 2019 prediction is Pursuit Series will be bought by Smirnoff, and we will be in the Owl Creek Park with a pyramid of me and Kenny.
And animatronic Kenny and Ryan are just like waving to everyone as the train goes by.
That's right.
Yeah. I think there should be a big roundtable prediction. You know, like roundtable is going to get bought up by Bravo TV. I don't know. What are we? can we get, you know, a bigger audience of a. Going on for the round table. No, I think there's, you know, as we just continue to see the growth, new brands pop up, new bottles pop up, and just really the enthusiasm for bourbon in general pop up. You know, the amount of people you see coming in from wine and beer and everywhere else, just because it is kind of that, I don't want to say new kid on the block, but it's definitely kind of, it's on the upward trend. You just see more and more opportunities with it, popularity. So
I think there's going to be another, like, New Riff kind of made some waves this year. I think there's going to be another New Riff next year coming out with something.
Oh, they're always
well, for sure.
Wilderness Trail made, I would say made they equal waves to New Riff. They did really well. If I were to, you know, this has been a hard year for me to kind of like study trends as I've done in years past because I've been so busy. But there's one trend that I think is going to hit hard next year, and that is the closure of craft distillers that did not do well. And we've already started to see some bankruptcies and some closures. Death Door in Wisconsin, which was a prominent gin distiller, is filing for bankruptcy. And that, if you would ask me, there's like, I would be like, no way, they're not filing for bankruptcy because they're hugely popular. And so I think we're about to see that. And I think that we're going to see the absence of Dave Pickerel really be felt. I don't think people realize how much that guy touched. And he served this community. He served this industry, this community, with every bit of his life. And I think it ended up costing his life. And so I hate to say that, but there's not another Dave Pickerel in this world.
Yeah, especially even from just a whistle pig perspective. You know, you think about, I mean, who I kind of know the owner's name, but Dave Pickerel was who I would think about when I think about whistle pig. So that's a huge gap for sure. So
definitely.
Yeah.
Would be a nice prediction. I think this is going to come true. One last one. I think we may do another live taping potentially of the Bourbon Community Roundtable.
Yeah.
And we'll be able to get Fred there this time. And, you know, Carrie, since you will be the newest person joining us live, you're going to have to top the bottle that Brian brought to the tapings.
No pressure, but he brought a 33 old Taylor.
I believe it was a 1917. It was 17 years old. So
you know what?
Barreled in 17, bottled in 33.
I have Blood Oath packed one.
No wonder you're cynical.
All right,
meeting you guys. I do. It'll be a lot of fun.
Great. So let's go ahead. Let's wrap it up. There's a few other predictions that came in through the chat. Chris Wiseman said Bourbon of the Year at San Francisco is not going to be made in Kentucky.
Oh,
I know. Fine. Crazy. Wow. Matt Cusick said he probably guesses that there's going to be at least another celebrity that's going to launch some sort of not good whiskey. That's the best way I could probably put that one out there.
I already know of one coming. It's
don't say Ron and Kenny.
All right, give us a hint, Fred. Give us a musician or actor?
Musician in the rap community.
If Ludacris comes out with a bourbon, because he's already got Conjure, I'm in.
It's totally Nelly, isn't it? I love Nelly.
Luda.
Yeah.
Whatever. I get down on some 90s rap. Let's do that. Yeah. Into 2000s for sure.
Montel Jordan bringing out.
But yeah. Drake's the only other rapper I know with a whiskey right now, right?
I don't know if you call that a whiskey. That
Was it flavored?
Yeah, it's flavored. Well, it's not flavored in by technicality, but it's flavored by Canadian standards.
I'd love to interview Trick Daddy on, you know, Burn.
I don't even know who the fuck Trick Daddy is.
You know who Trick Daddy is? Oh, man. You gotta follow him on Instagram. You get his you didn't listen to Take It to the House? Are you kidding me, Frick?
How does it go?
Trick wrote again. I'm not gonna embarrass myself like that.
No, the last great rapper was Tupac, and that was kind of the
Fred, come on, dude. 25 years ago, man.
Tupac.
We've evolved since then.
Yeah, I know. You know, get the
Tupac get out the
direction. Bourbon brand.
Come on, man.
All right. We've overshot this roundtable by a lot longer than I thought we were going to go, but it's always good. And I'm sure people are going to really dig a lot of the conversation too, because, you know, there was, for all of us here, we had a great 2018. We're all starting to try to figure out what does 2019 look like for us as well, and figure out how to kind of carve those paths and start making those moves. So again, congratulations to everybody that's sitting here. It's been a pleasurable 2018 to spend with all of you. We're all happy to see where everybody's kind of driving and working towards as well. And thank you everybody for else that's listening. I hope you had a successful 2018 as well. And hopefully it pours back into 2019. But before we sign off, I want to let everybody kind of go around the horn one more time and talk about where they blog at as usual. So Jordan,
normal exit as normal.
Sure. Yeah, exit as normal.
As normal. So this is Jordan, one of the three guys from BreakingBourbon.com. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon at Breaking Bourbon. Sign up for our newsletter. And also we basically do a near daily calendar update release. So again, if you're looking for last minute Christmas gifts, find out what's being released in this month or months past.
All right. And we're still doing this because I think everybody's loving all this stuff in the chat about 90s rap. So you got to say who your favorite like 90s or 2000s rap artists are.
But, you know, I got to be honest. I'm not a huge like rap fan.
Oh,
I appreciate it, but I just don't like, I'll listen to rap nonstop, but I just don't have like a favorite
artist. What's your music? What's your what's your flave?
I like a lot of like top stuff, a lot of jam bands. You know, on a good Sunday night, honest to God, on a good Sunday night with a bourbon, I still tune into WFPK and listen to their banjo show. So
wow,
that's the nerdiest thing I've ever
check
heard.
Out a, check out a band nice called Sunday. Steel Wheels.
What was that, friend?
Steel Wheels. Check out a band called Steel Wheels.
Okay, I will.
I did a tasting with them. I think they're the most talented band in the grass. Yeah, but I don't know why they haven't taken off, but they're amazing.
Okay.
I don't know why they're not good yet, but
bluegrass is a hard genre to break in.
You know what? So when we were down for Bourbon and Beyond, I threw it on when Nick was there, the radio show's on, and he looked, I'm like, oh, you mind if I put it on? He goes, no. 5 minutes later, he's like, what the hell are we listening to?
I was this close to meeting Del McCoury.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah.
He's a god.
Nice.
But then you didn't. So let's go on.
Wow. Dick night.
All right, Blake, you go next. And don't forget your favorite rapper.
All right. I am Blake from bourboner.com. Once again, all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, B-O-U-R-B-O-N-R. This list is going to be long. 90s rap is kind of where I lived for a long time in my AAU basketball team. So, you know, this wasn't quite 90s, but, you know, Southern hip hop was really big here in Florida. So, you know, Trick Daddy, throwing some Crime Mob every now and then, few others like that. You know, Biggie was in there for sure. Like sixth grade, middle school basketball game, definitely had Life After Death playing. So that was big.
On repeat.
Yeah. all right, I'm done.
Carrie, what about you?
Hey, this is Carrie.
Are you a 3-6 Mafia person?
No, I'm actually
stuff, guys. God.
Don't mess with my 90s rap. All right. In 95, Montel Jordan was the best, but in 96... I'm from Atlanta, and Outkast was the best.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Outkast was great. So,
it was dope.
Andre 3000 is still one of the top.
No, they were awesome, man. Listen to any of that stuff nowadays, and you're like, wow, this was really good shit that was ahead of time. But I am a team of one of suburbia.com that's going to write a lot of stuff in 2019. And as usual, you know, I love hanging with you guys. I'm very proud of all the stuff you guys have accomplished. Fred, it's been nice to actually get to know you this year. Sometimes, and you know, as usual, enjoy hanging with you guys and keeping me on this podcast, and definitely looking forward to good things next year.
All right, and so Fred, we already know Fred's Tupac. So Ryan, what about you?
Well, you said 3-6 Mafia, but I really like the Hot Boys.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if that was 90s or early 2000s.
That was early 2000s, but Wayne, BG,
yeah. Well, they were Turk.
90s. Yeah.
Birdman.
Yeah. I mean, that was all them together. You know, they jammed. But so I appreciate everybody coming on again. Obviously, this is our favorite thing to do. And I know it's a lot of time and effort on your all's part to put this together. And I want to do a challenge for everyone here and our audience for, ooh, you know, we're in the Christmas season, you know, in the holidays, you know, being in this community, I feel blessed, and I'm sure many of you are blessed with more than enough. So I would challenge you to look to someone. This is supposed to be the most wonderful time of year. Look to someone. It might not be having the most wonderful time of year, and help them out. Look to someone to give them a helping hand this season, because that's what it's all about. Because we are so blessed, and I think we can just do a lot of good in the world with bourbon and everything. So that's my goal for everyone is let's use bourbon. Don't be cynical about it. Let's turn it into a positive. So
that's awesome. Can we also buy you a new t-shirt and a new hat?
Yeah.
Speaking of being positive.
Yeah, I was going to say, guy just pours his heart out.
Yeah. No, you're a good man.
That's funny.
Yeah, we love you. Man. You're a good man.
Well, that's a great way to finish it, and please, everybody, do that. And also go out, and I don't know why anybody didn't mention Snoop Dogg or Wu-Tang. But,
there's so many
to choose from. Oh, but I know. I'm more of a Nelly.
I mentioned Snoop Dogg.
Oh, okay. He still puts on good shows at Vegas too. So if you're out there, go check that out.
I may not have said his name, but that's a hint.
Oh,
hey, the No Limit people too.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Snoop Dogg was actually on No Limit for a little bit. Right. Wasn't he?
Switched labels for a while.
Yeah. After Death Row.
It's getting hot in here.
Man, right. we could kill some 90s rap trivia. That's for sure.
Yeah. No.
All right.
Metal, baby. Heavy metal.
So let's go ahead. Yeah, because I don't think we're going to see Nelly at Bourbon Beyond this year. So we'll have to.
Know.
I
do know the artists, but no, I mean, you won't.
Don't tempt me, Fred. I will be on stage.
Didn't Nelly like pee on people or something?
That was R. Kelly.
No, not Nelly. Yeah, that was R. Kelly.
He did worse than that, though.
No, Nelly, like, he may have punched a guy or two, but they deserved it.
He wears a Band-Aid, you know? Yeah.
All right, LL Cool J's, let's go and call us out. So thank you, everybody, that joined us tonight. Thank you, everybody, that was on the comments. We almost eclipsed 100. I think we were at like 96, something like that at one point. But it was fantastic to see everybody on the show tonight. Again, another great wrap-up. We'll see everybody again probably this time in a year to do the same exact show. And we'll see if these predictions came true. But if not, you can catch us again here another 3 weeks on the next roundtable. And, of course, every Thursday morning with a new Bourbon Pursuit podcast release. Thank you so much for everybody that joined in. And we'll see everybody next week.